We'll call the April 29th, 2026 meeting of the Transportation Commission to order. And Ariana, if you'd please read the instructions.
Welcome to our virtual meeting. We're going to cover a few basic items at the beginning. If you lose connection at any point during the meeting, you can reconnect by clicking the link or calling the number in your original email to members and city staff. Members, if you are able, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Staff, if you are able, please activate your video when you are speaking. Use the raise hand feature when you'd like to be recognized to speak or ask questions. Staff, click raise hand when you're asked a question. The chair will do their best to call on committee members in the order in which hands are raised. Lowering your hand will take you out of the queue. Members of the public who have registered to speak, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon. The clerk will tell you when your time is up. After speaking, a member of the body may ask you a question. If you need to share documentation with the commission, please send it to the email listed on today's agenda. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Ariana. Hope your voice is better. That doesn't sound comfortable. Aiden, if you'd call a roll, please.
Sure thing. William Okovich.
Present.
Sean O'Brien.
Present.
Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford.
She's no longer on the commission. It's Alder Derek Field now.
Oh, thank you.
I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Transportation Commission. We're very happy to have you.
Next is Ann Kovich.
Here.
Robbie Weber.
Here.
Denise Jess.
I'm present.
Bill Bremer. Here. Harold Gleams.
Here.
Lynn Olson.
Present.
And Kaylee Jameson.
Here.
And then Barbara Harrington McKinney, Pepe Barros, and Chris McCahill are all excused.
Okay. Okay, so we have 10 members here. And since we have three absences, both Kaylee and Lynn are able to make motions and vote. And again, with the new Alder appointments on Tuesday, April 21st, Alder Derek Field was appointed to the Transportation Commission, and welcome to the Commission, Alder. And Alders Okovich, O'Brien, and Harrington McKinney were reappointed for another year. So welcome back. We're happy to have you again. So, did everybody have a chance to look at the minutes from the last meeting? Alder Okovich.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Is a motion, Bill?
Second.
Is a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing no hands, I'm going to assume a unanimous consent vote. A unanimous consent vote. Unless anybody wishes to vote no or abstain. If so, please raise your hand. Okay, the motion is carried unanimously. Do we have anybody registered under item one to speak, Aiden?
We do not.
Okay. Any disclosures or recusals this evening? Okay, seeing no hands. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Items two and three are proposed for the consent agenda. Is there anybody registered to speak on either of those items, Aiden?
No, there's not. A few people registered in support, but do not wish to speak.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Does anybody wish to separate either item from the consent agenda? Okay, I'm seeing no hands. Do we have a motion on the consent agenda? Harold.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Alder O'Brien.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Since it's consent agenda, I'm assuming no discussion. Also assuming unanimous consent vote, unless anybody wishes to vote no. Or if you wish to abstain, please raise your hand. Okay, that motion is carried. So we move on to item four, WISDOT Park Street discussion. Krista. Christoph, are you there?
I see you're just working on my sharing.
Okay, all right.
Okay, can you see the screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So what we want to do is give an update on the discussions we've been having with WISDOT about a jurisdictional transfer on Park Street, which may sound wonky, but is, I think, actually quite a big deal. So going to talk through street jurisdiction in general and then the specific proposal on Park Street. So we've discussed this topic already, but I felt it was worth bringing back here. If you look at the city of Madison, we have a lot of different types of roadways. The majority are obviously just city streets. But beyond that, we have interstates, US highways, and state trunk highways, which are operated, maintained, designed by the state, by WISDOT. But then we also have a set of what we call connecting highways, which are essentially historically city streets that WISDOT treats as part of their network. And then we also have county roads and then we also have county roads in addition to that, plus a set of private roads. And if you look at the jurisdiction on this, interstate effectively owned by the state, responsible for maintenance is WISDOT, and the design is done by WISDOT. We've seen this on the interstate expansion project. U.S. highways are the same, effectively owned by the state. WISDOT does the maintenance, including things like snow plowing, and WISDOT does the design. A U.S. connecting highway, though, is different in that it is effectively a city street with the city responsible for maintenance, but because it serves as part of the state highway system, WISDOT provides payments for maintenance. And the design is done either by WISDOT with city input or by the city with WISDOT approval. State trunk highways, again, like a U.S. highway, but then state trunk connecting highways are like U.S. connecting highways. And then we also have the county highways and the municipal streets as shown here. So I want to focus now on the connecting highways. These are essentially local streets that carry state highways through cities or villages. The city maintains and operates them, but WISDOT has to review and approve major maintenance and traffic control changes. To reimburse the city for effectively maintaining part of the state highway system, the city receives annual connecting highway aids, which is state money we get for the maintenance of those roadways. And whenever there is a reconstruction of these, that reconstruction is a state-local partnership with part of the funding coming from the state and part of the funding coming from the city. If you look at this map here, everything you see in red is a connecting highway and is handled like this. So what is the proposal that we are discussing with WISDOT now? We are proposing a transfer of a set of roadways that are currently US 151. That is a long section of Park Street, a short section of West Washington, Proudfit, North Shore, a section of John Nolan, specifically the section essentially passes under Monona Terrace, not the section across the lake. And then a section of Blair Street, namely what connects John Nolan to East Wash. So these, rather than being connecting highways, would now be city streets. In order to do that, the highway has to move since a city street can't carry a highway number. And US 151 actually goes from Iowa all the way to the shores of Lake Michigan. The new path for that highway designation would follow the belt line in the interstate. That's a little bit longer, but actually quite a bit faster. I'm pretty sure nobody actually follows 151 to get from a place outside of Madison to another place outside of Madison. This does, however, leave East Washington as a bit of an orphan in terms of numbering. So that would continue to be a state connecting highway as a spur route. That would receive a new highway designation, but the current thinking is that that would not actually be posted as a highway number. So it would be a official designation for funding purposes, but not a designation for guiding motorists. All of these roadways will remain part of what's called the National Highway System, which means there's some federal funding eligibility and some design standards, though generally our conclusion is that those design standards have not been particularly problematic for us. Quite a few city streets are part of the National Highway System because this includes connections to things like inner city bus terminals and airports. As part of this, there is financial considerations. So first of all, what this means is we no longer get state connecting highway funding for the portion we transferred. So that's around $300,000 a year that we're not getting. And we also do not get state funding for future reconstruction. To make up for that, we get a one-time transfer. We have not received the official offer on that transfer. There is a calculation technique WISDOT has to go through. They are finalizing their numbers. We're thinking, based on our discussions, that we're looking at roughly $36 million on that. $10 million of that replaces $10 million in funding that WISDOT was giving us to rebuild Park Street as part of the BRT project. So, out of that 36, 10 is money we were getting already that we don't get for reconstruction because it's no longer a state connecting highway. So instead we get it at this payment. But the 26, but then the other 26 is there to essentially compensate us for us taking over these roadways and taking over the future reconstruction of these roadways and would be used for city roadway projects. So why would we do this? First of all, it makes a more logical route for 151. If we're looking at the highway system, this actually makes more sense. Secondly, we get full design control. So we have discussed with things like signal warrants that currently we cannot make changes to these streets without WISDOT approval. Once this goes through, it would mean that we no longer need that WISDOT approval for changes on these streets. If we want to put in a traffic signal, we go through the warrant process on the signal. We do not need WISDOT's approval on that warrant process. And obviously, we get an upfront payment for reconstruction. The costs, we get no state connecting highway aids. We get no state funding for future reconstruction. What doesn't really change? Roadways don't change. The same streets still exist. Anybody who wants to drive down the street can drive down the street exactly like they do today. And there's also no change in maintenance responsibility. Actions going forward, we are about to meet with WISDOT to, and hopefully we'll be getting a final draft soon. That will then require approval by the city of Madison, which would be common council. I would imagine references on something on an action like that would be something like TC, Finance Board of Public Works, and would then be signed by the mayor. And WISDOT would need to approve with a signature by the secretary and also an application to the AASHTO Special Committee on U.S. Route Numbering for final approval to move the highway number. My understanding is that is a fairly routine approval. When we have mentioned this in the past, the question has immediately come up, should we be considering this for other roadways? There is obviously a set of other connecting highways, and WISDOT has expressed openness to other jurisdictional transfers on connecting highways. It would be a similar kind of situation with a one-time payment. It would require rerouting U.S. or state highway numbers. So for every one of these, you'd have to think through like what happens to that highway number, just like we had to think through it on what we're proposing here. We will note, though, that some of these roadways could have very costly future reconstructions. The wider a roadway is, the more expensive it is to reconstruct. Roadways that have things like bridges, grade separations, those are more expensive to reconstruct. So compared to the segment we're talking about now, a lot of these segments would actually be putting more expensive roadways on the city's books. If we were to want to talk about a jurisdictional transfer on a state trunk highway or a US highway, it can be done, but it is much more complicated. It only makes sense on spurs or where a route has been essentially completely replaced by a newer facility. The big difference for us on these would be that this would also transfer maintenance responsibilities. The connecting highways, we are already doing the maintenance on, we are already doing the snow plowing on, we are handling the lighting on, we already have the crews, we already have the budget in place to do that. If we were to take on roadways where WISDOT is currently performing those functions, we would need to add city staff, we would need to add city equipment, and that would show up as a permanent increase in the budget of streets and engineering and others. And as noted, we would be fully responsible for future reconstructions on these roadways, which can be quite complex, quite costly. And with that, I'm happy to answer your questions. See Alder O'Brien?
Yeah, thank you. Oh, and you're muted.
Excuse, somebody muted me, sorry. Excuse me, I just wanted to make sure nobody's registered to speak on this item, Aiden.
We do have one registrant, actually.
Okay, so if we could hold the questions until after we hear from the public and then come back to you all. Sorry, somebody muted me. I don't know how I got muted, thanks. Go ahead, who do we have?
So we have Jim Kraft of Fish Hatchery Road Supports and wishes to speak.
Okay, go ahead.
So I just wanted to note how excited I am that this jurisdictional transfer is a actual real possibility. It is moving forward. And one of the things that I would love to keep in mind, and like one, and I'm also very excited that the idea of other potential jurisdictional transfers are up for longer term consideration, because as we've seen over and over and over again, WISDOT has prioritized level of service over building safe systems. And we've seen this in Park Street. We saw this writ large in the Park Street safety related meetings. And I'm so excited that we can actually do something now. And let's think about, and with this money, I noticed like, oh, we're going to maybe plop some more of that extra pot of money onto John Nolan. Okay. But let's think about other things that we can do along this corridor that's still quite dangerous. Places like that chunk of West Wash is extremely heavily used by pedestrians, should be more used. We removed the bridge, but we didn't really make that crossing safer. So let's think about, and similarly with Proudfit, crossing Proudfit sucks. And it should be a core connection between Brittingham and downtown. So let's think about how we can take advantage of this money to make the BRT system, the BRT investment better. There's been things where we've ratcheted back because, oh, this is too expensive. Well, we've got an opportunity here to build a better system. So let's take advantage of it and not just, send that money in various little bits and pieces that doesn't build the city we want to have for the future. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks very much for coming and sharing your thoughts. Does anybody have a question for the registrant? Okay, seeing no hands, thanks so much for coming. So now let's go to comments or questions. Alder O'Brien, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Christoph, I don't know if you can talk a little bit more about the financials and kind of some of the like stuff behind that. So the $300,000 that we are currently getting, does that go into the operations for the transportation department?
That is actually a good question where it shows up on the budget. It's essentially going to cover work that is being done by multiple different departments, including traffic engineering, including streets, et cetera.
Okay. And I'm guessing my next question is probably going to be similar to that in answer. So the 36, or I guess the 26 million, is that going into the general fund, or where is that going? And have you, or has that been designated already?
That has not been designated. Given that this has only been a discussion, we definitely didn't want to write a city budget based on this agreement. I mean, I think the general thought behind that money is that it is covering, you know, the future cost of reconstructions, which would seem to suggest that it would go towards street projects. But no, we have not. There is no proposal on the table for exactly how that is budgeted.
Okay, cool. And then I guess, is there a timeline? I mean, this is a long conversation that y'all have been having with WISDOT. Is there like a general timeline that you're seeing for this discussion?
We're hoping this could move relatively quickly. We've been essentially right now, we've been waiting for WISDOT to finalize things on their end. But I think once those are finalized, the biggest remaining part of the process is actually our approval process.
Okay, thank you.
Yang, did you have something to add? No?
No, thank you. Yeah, I just want to see a second, Christoph, that the current maintenance funding, I believe just goes to the general fund. That in terms funds, you know, the operation, maintenance operations of a few different departments, you know, streets, engineering, traffic engineering. Yeah,
great.
That's a great question. Thank you.
Hey, Anne. Thanks. Just a quick note from the control room. If you could mute yourself when you're not speaking, it sounds like your system is creating an echo for some reason while other people are talking.
Mine is?
Yeah, so if you could just mute yourself when you're not speaking, that would be helpful. I can also help you out with that as well if you forget.
Okay, it's just, all right. It's just that sometimes I have to speak, so I will.
Yeah, no, you can speak, but when you're not or when you're done, if you could try to mute.
Yeah, if I could, I'd reboot. But since Chris isn't here, that's kind of difficult. So Alderfield, go ahead. You're muted, Alder.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Chair. When I saw the route and that it extends past Park Street, I checked Engineering's Transportation Improvement Plan and see that we have a planned resurfacing project in 2027 for the remainder of John Nolan under the Monona Terrace and then up to Blair. And I'm wondering if this is an example of the jurisdictional transfer, is an example of where we might be able to do more interesting or creative things with more flexibility when the city has control. I'm thinking about the resurfacing project and then anything else in the future related to the lakeway improvements in this area.
Chris Petakowski, go ahead.
Yeah, good observation, Alderfield. We did put that in our mayoral request. There's just a pavement replacement project between Broome and Blair that we put in our request, and that was partly to work with TE and their tunnel lighting project because they're having a hard time getting a bidder. So we think if we put that together with a street project, we'll have good luck. But at the same time, that pavement is in bad shape, mm-hmm. and needs replacement, and this became a potential source of funding for that project. I think another one that would be not too far off would be North Shore, like a resurface of North Shore Proudfit as well. So yes, and then when we do those projects, we will have full flexibility of a regular city project to design it the way we normally would do our processes.
Nice, thank you.
And I will note that one of the discussions that's happening within the downtown plan process, and I will note that there is a public meeting on that coming up tomorrow, so people should come, is actually all of the streets just mentioned really fall within the footprint of that area plan. So that is part of the discussions we're having as part of the transportation part of that plan.
Okay, thanks. That's all you had then, Alder? Okay. Great. Alder Olkovich, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I think Yang or Kristoff, do we already have a design for Park Street? Like, did for the reconstruction, did Wittstadt have a design for it? Okay, and are we planning on updating that design?
The design for the part of Park Street that is being reconstructed is actually a city design, not a Wittstadt design, which has been done as part of the BRT project. Okay. So that is our design. Now, it is a design with Wittstadt approval, but that is also a design that is part of the federal funding process for BRT. I believe that design is a considerable upgrade on what we have now and includes a lot of new safety features in it.
Okay, so then even though as part of this jurisdictional transfer, we won't be required to go to Wittstadt for things like warrant approvals, for signal warrants, there's not plans to update that design?
Well, I mean, we already in that are have, for example, a signal that we would like to do that where Wistot's initial response to that signal was that they do not approve it. So there could be some immediate impacts as a result of that.
Okay. Okay. I guess I would like to hear more about what the potential impacts could be.
Yeah, I think that's really the big one. I think some of the other considerations about on-street parking and so forth, you know, do we have 24/7 parking on sections of it? Those are the other kinds of things we could consider there. Overall, like I said, I think the section of Park Street that is due to be reconstructed, we've worked really hard to make that a good design that has a lot of multimodal benefits. And Wistot has been a good partner on that. I don't think we're looking at radical changes there. I will note, though, that there are sections of Park Street that are not being reconstructed under the BRT project, where this may make it easier for us to go and do retrofits and a variety of other changes.
Yeah, I remember you specifically mentioning that a lot of where we have RRFBs or the flashing beacons, they're there because we don't need a warrant for those, but we do need a warrant for a signal. And okay. Yep, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Alder. Robbie, go ahead.
Thank you. First, I don't think it's Anne that's the problem. I don't hear any echo when she speaks, but I'll just throw that in there. I guess my question is, I've sort of lost track of the timeline for reconstructing Park Street, and I'm wondering if this would change the timeline. In other words, would it allow us to do anything faster? And at the same time, I do realize that we are hoping for federal funding for the BRT north-south route, but would this help get us get some of the Park Street pieces of it faster? So I guess, is this jurisdictional transfer and possible change in the, like, the funding, or when we get the funding or how we get the funding, is this going to change at all the timeline for either Park Street reconstruction or moving ahead with the Park Street section of the BRT?
No, because the driver we have there, as the project schedule is currently set up, is we do not want to start work on Park Street until a lot of the work on John Nolan is done, given that those are two parallel roadways. So the BRT schedule is actually set up for the Park Street reconstruction to be at the tail end of the BRT schedule, 29-30, in order to avoid having sort of two parallel construction zones. So funding wouldn't change that. I think the other thing I will note on anything that is contained within the BRT project, given that we are seeking federal funding, we do not want to spend any money on that without federal approval to spend that money, because if we do, we could actually jeopardize the federal part of the funding. So we will always be careful on that with on the parts of this project that are part of that North-South BRT project.
Okay, thanks. That all makes complete sense, but thank you for answering those questions.
Thanks, Robbie. Harold, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe you just answered it, but I'll just make sure I understand. I guess I was going to ask about the federal funding for BRT. I know there's a local match requirement, and I guess this would just be, instead of state funds, it's now city funds that constitute the match, but this doesn't require whatever FTA reapproving something or doing another round of review or anything.
We have actually been deep in talking to the FTA about our funding plan and everything else. And what we have said to them very clearly is this $10 million is this $10 million coming from WSDOT, regardless of whether it comes under one agreement or another agreement.
Very good.
And we haven't heard any concerns on that.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Harold. Bill, go ahead.
Thanks. Christoph, I have a question on. So I'm all in favor of this transfer, and I've long looked at this as making sense for both parties to do this. So when they come off of the state system, do these streets, they become city streets, and do they move on to another city or to a state group of streets, if you will, to locals? Does the state give any money for local streets as state aid? No,
general local streets are locally funded.
100%. Okay. So I know that there are some state programs for smaller town roads and things like that. So nothing, it will not increase that increase in mileage will not help us at all in getting any additional or other state funds, state aid. I shouldn't say funds, it's state aid, just.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I think we could have quite a lengthy discussion about how the state funds roadways, because we could point out that some of it may, but that is, that is the system that a legislature has set up. There are some cases in which we are able to go for state or federal grants for local roadways. So it's not that there can never be state funding in it, but there isn't any kind of systematic state aid for that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They become eligible for urban funds, but they only get an X number of urban funds for the city. And doesn't matter if you go here or goes there, that's all you get. The pot doesn't get increased. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Does anybody else have any comments or questions for Christoph? So it sounds like we'll hear back from you soon, Christoph, and potentially if these discussions with WSDOT and a final agreement comes our way and we'll move forward, it'll likely be referred to the Transportation Commission, I would guess, with a council resolution addressing it.
Sounds good.
Okay, anybody have any other comments or questions on this item? Okay, is it helping for me to mute Ariana or not?
You only have to mute and when other people are talking. We don't hear an echo from your end when you're talking. It's only when other people are speaking.
Okay, no idea why that's going on. All right, nobody have anything else? Okay, great. Thanks so much, Christoph. Item number 5. That item is not ready, so I would need a motion to refer that to the June 3rd, 2026 Transportation Commission meeting. Alder Okovich.
So moved.
There's a motion. Robbie?
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second to refer item 5 to the June 3rd, 2026 Transportation Commission. Is there any discussion about that? Okay, I'm going to assume unanimous consent vote unless anybody wishes to vote no or abstain. So please raise your hand. Okay, that motion's carried unanimously. Move on to item six, the quarterly traffic safety report. Lieutenant Leinert.
Hello, everyone. Can you see me?
We can hear you. Oh, now we can see.
All right, there we go. All right, let me share my screen here. All right, can everyone see that?
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. All right, I'll get started here. So again, let me try to remove this. There we go. Okay. So again, our traffic enforcement goals, I know we kind of brush over this every time, but we focus on the High Injury Network. And most of you know where that is, East Washington Avenue, the Beltline, Mirror Point Road, and a number of other roads. We try to focus on hazardous moving violations, and we de-emphasize non-hazardous violations. And for those, we do support alternative outcomes like warnings. We definitely do as much extra patrol as we can in the school zone areas, and as well as responding to community member complaints. The citations and warnings citywide number, as you can see, the hazardous citations are up this year in quarter one at 3,366 comparatively to some previous quarters. And another graph broken down by specific types of violations. Speeding, of course, continues to be the top citation. Almost doubled that in quarter one of this year. And non-hazardous violations are up as well. And similar to that, just another line graph showing our focus is on hazardous citations over non-hazardous. Our citywide warnings, very similar. Obviously not as high as our citations, but the types of warnings are similar to the citations. And the non-hazardous. And I will now talk about the crashes. So in quarter one, we had five fatalities related to five crashes. So the first fatality crash happened on Monday, January 12th, around 3:22 p.m. That was on Packers Avenue, just north of Londonderry. That was a motor vehicle versus pedestrian crash. Roadway factors were not significant. It was a dry surface. It was during the day. There were no environmental or roadway factors, and the weather conditions were clear. The motor vehicle was northbound on Packers Avenue. The pedestrian was northbound on the sidewalk and then attempted to cross Packers mid-block when the motor vehicle ended up striking the pedestrian. This is the location again. And the vehicle was a Honda Accord. It was occupied by one person. The involved occupant of the Honda was a 30-year-old white male. And driver actions were he was going straight. He was ultimately arrested for operating after revocation, causing death, and then failure to install an IID and a probation hold. He also had a revoked license. The pedestrian was a 77-year-old black female and unfortunately suffered fatal injuries. Crash number two happened on Thursday, February 5th at 7:43 a.m. That was on South Park Street at Burr Oak. That was also a motor vehicle versus pedestrian. Not significant roadway factors in this one either. The road conditions were dry. It was during the day, no environmental over other roadway factors. The vehicle was traveling southbound on Park Street in lane number one when it collided with a pedestrian who was attempting to cross Park Street in a fully marked crosswalk with illuminated warning lights flashing. And just a diagram of what happened. It was a 2012 Ford Explorer, only occupied by one. The driver was a 51-year-old white female, and her driver actions of exceeding the speed limit, failing to yield for right-of-way, disregarding other traffic control signals, operating a motor vehicle in an aggressive, reckless manner. The pedestrian was a 17-year-old white male, suffered fatal injuries. Crash number three was on Wednesday, March 4th at 12:33 a.m. at 832 South Park Street. And that was a lone motor vehicle was involved in that. Again, no significant roadway factors there. They were dry, it was dark, but it was well lit. Vehicle ended up running a red light from northbound Fish Hatchery Road to northbound Park Street. It ended up clipping the median curb, and then it drifted across Park Street, jumped onto the curb on the opposite side of the roadway, hit a retaining wall, and flipped the vehicle. The driver died as a result of the injuries he sustained from the crash. The family does believe that he was driving himself to the hospital for an ongoing medical issue, which they believe caused the crash. The vehicle was a Dodge Journey. And again, lone occupant. He was a 36-year-old Hispanic male. Again, we believe it was a medical event that caused the crash. And crash number four happened on March 21st at 7:44 p.m. That was on Commercial at Mesta. Another motor vehicle versus pedestrian. Again, no significant roadway factors. It was dry, dark, but lit. The motor vehicle was eastbound on Commercial Avenue when it struck the pedestrian at or near Mesta Lane. It was unit two, which is the pedestrian, was trying to cross Commercial at Mesta from north to south, according to witnesses, and not in the crosswalk area. Unfortunately, the pedestrian died from the injuries from the crash. Unit one, the motor vehicle did stop briefly, but then left the scene. And impairment may be a factor. Still an open investigation, as are the other ones. It was a Chevy Impala occupied by two. And the driver was a 33-year-old black male. Suspected of drugs. The driver actions going straight and run involving death, operating while suspended, causing death and first offense OWI. And the pedestrian was a 61-year-old white male, suffered fatal injuries. And crash number five was on Tuesday, March 31st at 12:32 a.m. That was on South Midvale, 206 feet south of Ames Street. That was a lone motor vehicle involved. Again, no significant roadway factors. The motor vehicle was southbound on Midvale and it was traveling at a high rate of speed when it lost control in the 500 block and ended up going up onto the median and crashed head on into a tree. It spun 180 degrees and ended up coming to a rest. Facing northbound, the driver of Unit 1 was pronounced dead on scene. Three passengers of Unit 1 were transported to UW Hospital with various levels of severe injuries. The airbags were deployed. Unit 1 sustained devastating front-end damage, including the engine being ejected into the northbound lanes of Midvale Boulevard. Here's a diagram. There's a Buick Regal was involved, shown it struck the tree. And the driver was a 19-year-old Hispanic male that suffered the fatal injuries. His actions, failing to keep in a proper lane, operating the vehicle in an erratic, reckless, or negligent manner, operating at erratic, suddenly changing speeds. And the passengers, 19-year-old white male, 19-year-old Asian male, and an 18-year-old black male, all suffered serious injuries. And just a graph showing our fatalities comparatively to other years so far anyways. And another graph showing similar just fatalities and serious injury crashes. And our traffic complaints so far in quarter one, we're at 209, comparatively much higher than previous quarters. And I'll touch on the BOT funded traffic grants. So most of you are aware that as a result of Wisconsin DOT funds, we're able to have extra traffic enforcement in partnership with Dane County Sheriff's Office. And we focus on alcohol, seatbelt, bike, ped, and speed laws, as those are specifically related to the grants. This consists of deploying extra officers, usually it's 4 to 6 officers a day for 4-hour shifts on overtime as a result of these grants. And the grants are very specific. We have to stick to the high injury network. And Dane County Sheriff's Office does the same with their sheriffs. So quarter one didn't start because we were late getting the grants from DOT until February 8th. So it hasn't really given us much time to deploy the grants, but the minute we did get them, we were able to start deploying officers. So they started mid-February, obviously until March 31st. We deployed 9 impaired driving grants, 2 speeding, 7 seatbelt, and 5 pedestrian bike safety grants. And then the next several slides are going to show what the grant lead officer provides after each grant deployment. And I'm not going to read each one of them, but you can peruse through them at your leisure. I will make note as I kind of run through some of these, how many citizens the grant lead notes in their remarks about just how thankful they are to see officers out there. And I feel like it's unusual. So it's good seeing that, and officers appreciate, hearing from citizens that, that their efforts are appreciated. One on, an alcohol grant on John Nolan. This was the first OWI grant of the season. We did end up getting an OWI arrest out of it, which is an operate while intoxicated individual. Another alcohol grant on East Washington Avenue. The highest speed stopped on this one was 81 miles per hour, which is a little crazy. Another seatbelt grant. Bike ped grant on Park Street. A lot of Park Street enforcement. This one, we ended up using one of our officers as a duck to walk across the street to help try to see about compliance instead of watching a citizen put their own life at risk walking across the street. We have officers do it and are able to quickly stop people when needed. Another alcohol grant on Packers and Commercial Avenue. And another one on Fish Hatch and Carver Street. Another seatbelt one on Packers Avenue and International. Again, more positive engagement from citizens passing by, thumbs up. Another one on East Washington Avenue. Another seatbelt grant on East Washington Avenue. Another bike ped grant on University Avenue near Overlook Pass there. I'll call a grant on Fish Hatchery Road. Thirty stops in this one. Another alcohol grant on East Wash. This one did result in OWI arrest. 0.29 BAC. Another seatbelt grant on South Park Street, and. And I'm sure this has been mentioned related to Park Street, but I know the South District also set up a traffic initiative last month. And we're out there daily for several weeks. Another seatbelt grant on East Wash. Our speed grant on the Beltline at Stoughton Road. Another bike ped grant on Park Street. Another one on the Beltline, Park Street. Fastest violation was 98 miles per hour. Another speed grant on McKee. Bike ped grant on East Washington Avenue. Another seatbelt grant on Verona Road in the Beltline. 41 miles per hour over the speed limit on this one. Another one on Packers Avenue for bike ped grant. 30 miles an hour over. Another alcohol grant. On Fish Hatchery Road. And that's it. Does anybody have any questions?
First, let's check Aiden. Do we have anybody registered to speak, Aiden?
We do not, no.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Alder Okovich, go ahead.
No, thank you, Chair, and thanks, Officer Meinert. Is a pretty significant increase in citations. I was wondering, are we getting more grants? Are officers doing more traffic stops on their normal patrols? Do you know why there's so many more citations?
I think it's probably a combination. We have some new members on our team this year. We have new command staff. Like you saw some of the speeds, I think, you know, it's not easy to, I mean, it's easy to get a traffic stop, you know, unfortunately nowadays. And, I couldn't narrow down the specific reason, but I could surmise, a bunch of different things.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alder. Robbie, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So I noticed, you know, quite a few of these grants are seatbelt grants. And I'm wondering, when you have a seatbelt grant, do you, I'm sort of assuming that you make other stops, like if somebody goes flying by you well over the speed limit, that's
oh, yeah,
still fair game when it's a seatbelt grant.
Yeah, regardless of the type of grant, if you're committing a violation in front of the grant officer, you're going to get stopped.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I guess the state has decided that prioritizing seatbelt use is important. And it's not that I'm not saying it's important. I'm just, you know, wishing a lot more money could be for dangerous moving violations.
Yeah, I think the reasoning, you know, behind that is because they see the number of fatality accidents where people aren't wearing their seatbelts. And so they're trying to evenly distribute the money to make sure we're, you know, focusing our efforts everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, so for alcohol OWI grants, how do you determine when to make a stop?
It's based on driving factors, and the ODBI grants, those deployments occur in the late evening hours when an ODBI most likely will occur. Mm-hmm. So if you get stopped for speeding, you know, at midnight, you know, you're more than likely going to be impaired as opposed to getting stopped at 4 p.m., right? So
there's usually some other type of moving violation that clues you in to stop the driver.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the OWI stops are, you know, they're for speeding or, you know, weaving in and out of lanes or not having your headlights on is a big one. Mm. When it's pitch dark out. So there's a lot of different indicators like, oh, that guy's probably had a few, right?
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Robbie. Bill, go ahead.
Thank you, Ann. Thanks for the presentation. I appreciate the grant summaries that the leads put together. I think that's great. I really, really appreciate that, and I think they should be commended for this follow-up and giving us the, you know, really the pulse of what's going on out on the streets. And so I think it's very good. One of the questions I have, okay, so it's early in the year. Have you had discussions, I think, you know, whether in past years, do the officers, because it's overtime, do you have a sense that sometimes later in the year, or I should say more, let's say in the summertime, that you have more trouble getting officers to volunteer for the overtime?
Yeah. Yeah. Even right now, we're starting to see that because we have so many events in the city and so many people are looking for officers to work a different event or a different, you know, overtime opportunity for, you know, you name it, that we're already starting to see that, you know, on some of these ODBI grants that we had, I only had, you know, two people that signed up, you know, so, and it's not because people don't want to, it's just that
they're so getting burned out.
Different opportunities out there. Yeah. And they're getting burned out a little bit, but you will definitely see more of that come, you know, September.
Well, I think it's important, and I think, you know, I think more and more citizens are appreciative. Like you say, you get the feedback from the people that are driving by that are obeying the speed limit and so forth, that they appreciate it, give them thumbs up. So I think, you know, we have to keep trying to make sure we try to get the officers to volunteer for the overtime. So thank you.
I appreciate that. I'll let the officers know.
Thanks. Yeah, we very much appreciate it and appreciate this information as well. Thanks, Bill. Denise.
Yeah, thanks, Ann. I appreciated Robbie's questions about the grants and how they're implemented. Can you just remind me what the purpose of the Ped Bike grant is and how it's utilized?
Yeah, that's focusing for drivers, right? Not so much for pedestrians. It's so drivers pay closer attention to those pedestrians. And so it really focuses on, I mean, if you look at our, you know, fatalities that we had, a lot of them were motor vehicle versus pedestrians. So
you're basically watching for situations where pedestrians are in the roadway and drivers are doing unsafe behaviors that would impact the pedestrian.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, we try to focus on those areas where we know there's more height, there's a, you know, higher density of pedestrians walking in the crosswalks, and try to get drivers to, a lot of it is just trying to get them to slow down in those areas.
Yep. Okay, great. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Denise. Does anybody else have a comment or a question for Lieutenant Miner? I'll just ask one quick one. It seems like we've had great additional traffic enforcement as noted by the huge increase in hazardous citations. It was 81% increase and a 53% increase in the non-hazardous. Do you see this continuing at this level going forward throughout the year?
It's hard to say. I mean, will drivers slow down? You know, we're going to continue our efforts, you know, as much as we possibly can, you know, as much as we can get officers deployed out there. But, you know, a lot of it depends on, you know, driver factors. If, you know, they end up seeing us out there and throughout the year more, and they start getting the hint that, oh, I gotta start slowing down on the road I travel every day to and from, you know, we're hoping that's the case. So hopefully, I mean, ideally, I would like to see, you know, come midsummer that the citation numbers do drop, because, you know, we don't like giving citations, right? You guys don't like, nobody likes receiving them, right? But you kind of have to sometimes in order to get to slow down traffic. So,
well, it would be a good thing if your presence out there would discourage the speeding and the other unsafe behavior. So,
yeah, and that's the challenge. Like a lot of times it does. But then how do you measure that, right? Because an officer can sit on a road for 4 hours and the majority of people will slow down, but we can't really measure that in numbers, right? So.
Yeah, great points. Anybody have any other comments or questions for the lieutenant? We appreciate all this information. As Bill said, it really does help us better understand the conditions. And as we make decisions on traffic safety improvements, this is really valuable information for us to have. So anybody anybody else have any comments or questions? Okay, thanks so much for coming. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you. I appreciate all of you.
Okay. We'll move on to item 7, which is an update from the Transportation Commission Appeals Subcommittee. Denise, Bill, and I served on the Appeal Subcommittee. Captain Eugene Worley from the Madison Police Department participated. Since Keith Pollock retired, Cecily Bacon, who's the Finance and Administration Manager for Traffic Engineering, is now handling taxi and other public passenger vehicle matters for the city. And Aiden was also there as well. We had two hearings scheduled, but the first for Cesar Samaniego was canceled because he had a family emergency. But we did have an appeal hearing for Andres Urbina. And the appeal subcommittee voted unanimously to uphold the denial due to the significant serious issues with his driving record. The subcommittee members were not comfortable after a relatively short time with no convictions. And we were also concerned about the lack of disclosure on the applications. So the denial was upheld. and we will look to reschedule the one that had to be canceled. And we've been informed that there's a third appeal that we will need to schedule as well. And I'll also make a comment that as a result of conversations during the hearing, that we've identified a future TC agenda item that we'd like to discuss, and that's qualifications and permits for paratransit drivers. And certainly we won't talk about that tonight, but I've already reached out to Metro Transit to try and set something up so that we can have further discussions about that. Does anybody have a question about the finding of the appeal subcommittee? Okay, thanks. We'll keep you posted on the other ones that we have. In terms of announcements, First, we have to move on to updates from members of other boards, committees, and commissions on traffic or transportation related topics. Does anybody have anything for the group tonight?
Thank you, Chair. Board of Public Works met last week, Wednesday, and had the approval of the roadway geometry for Regent Street on the agenda. There was a lot of comment. There was a long presentation by Tom Moore and discussion. And it ended with a motion to recommend the geometry with the exception of the 900 block, which is the one just west of Park Street. However, as I just learned before the meeting, that's not really in line with how BPW should have made the motion. So it's going to come back to the Transportation Commission after being at council, as far as I understand it. So yeah, we'll have that on our agenda at some point in the future. That's all I have.
Thanks, Harold. An interesting test, perhaps, of the update in the ordinance in terms of what we need to do. So, all right, I'll make a note on that and watch for that. Anybody have any other updates? Okay. We'll move on to announcements. And sadly, this is Kaylee's last meeting since she gave us her resignation effective April 30th, since they're moving out of state. But I wanted to take this opportunity to thank Kaylee for her service and for her participation, and we'll certainly miss having you on the commission. And did we lose Kaylee? No,
she's here. There.
Okay, there you are. Good. I just wanted to make sure. We really appreciate your participation, and we'll certainly miss you. And if we can just give her a virtual round of applause and say thanks, everybody, to Kaylee. And anybody have any other comments with regard to Kaylee? I think everybody joins in the congratulations.
I just wanted to say thank you, Kaylee. We'll miss you.
Thanks, everybody. I'll miss working with y'all too. And if you're ever in Toronto, give me a shout. I'd love to catch up.
That's quite out of state then, right? Okay. And thanks so much, Kaylee. So that's all I had with regard to announcements. With regard to future agenda items, in terms of the May 13th meeting, Many of the city staff members will be at the NACDO Designing Cities Conference. So we'll have a smaller group. We do have a resolution related to Safe Streets and Roads for All grant that will be coming to us, referred by the council. We're planning to have the No Right on Red review and discussion at this meeting, Metro Transit accessibility update, and Odana Road and South Whitney Way highway safety improvement project update. And we have a large number of items for the June 3rd agenda, which we'll certainly have to manage. And as I said, I'm adding a future TC agenda item on qualifications and permits for paratransit drivers. Does anybody have anything else that they would want to add as a future agenda item? Alder Field, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Not something additional, but just to note that I believe the Southwest and Southeast area plans will be on the June 3rd meeting. I believe that's the referral. We're introducing them next Tuesday at Council, and then that will finalize the referral schedule.
Okay, great. I will watch for that. Thank you so much for letting me know. Anybody have anything else? Bill?
Thanks, Ann. Regarding the right turn on red, I sat in on a webinar about maybe a couple of months ago, and can I send that to Aiden, that I'd like to have the people see that opportunity to look at that webinar regarding?
Sure, I think I sat in on that. It was really excellent. So if you have a link to it, Bill, if you send it to Aiden, he can go ahead and distribute it to members, and they can watch it if they'd like. Didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was very good. Too. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think it would be worthwhile if you're to have it available before the meeting rather than after the meeting.
Yeah, it was very helpful. So if people have an opportunity, I'd take a look at that beforehand. Anybody have any other agenda items? Future agenda items? No? Okay, and we need a motion to adjourn. Robbie.
Move adjournment.
Alder O'Brien.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. And I'm going to assume a unanimous consent vote, because who would vote against it? And again, thanks, Kaylee, and thanks, everybody. Appreciate your participation. See you next time.